Good evening and welcome to Screen Tone Club. This is your April 2020 bonus episode. We are recording this on the 4th of May 2020. Please don't point out the fact that we're recording it after April. We know. And this will be released as soon as we damn well can. This is going to be the free premium episode for the month because we're doing two premium episodes a month at the moment because of the whole lockdown thing. My name, as always, is Elliot Page, and I'm joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Hanley. How are you doing, Andy?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm just taking this as further evidence that some of our April has been stolen as part of this lockdown while we're all indoors. Like, my conspiracy theory continues to hold weight, that something's going on with time itself, because there just doesn't seem to be enough of it anymore.
Yeah, it's one of these things where, like, I don't even have a commute anymore, and yet I have less time in the day. I don't even get it anymore, frankly.
Yeah, this is what is baffling me, because I have less time in the morning and less time in the evening, yet I'm not travelling anywhere. Like, there's definitely... Something is awry here, and there's science needs to figure this out.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's wild. Speaking of wastes of time, actually, first and foremost, as mentioned, this is a bonus episode, which is brought to you with the support of our lovely Patreon supporters. If you like the work we're doing here and might want to hear more of these bonus episodes, if you don't already, please consider joining our Patreon, patreon.com/screentoneclub. There, from the mere sum of $1 a month, you can support us, and it really helps to defer the cost of all this stupid manga we buy, and also keep the lights on and the podcast hosted and all that. And also, quick shout out to Mr. Rob Jessup, who helped pick one of these two bonus episodes, but not this one, not the subject of this one in particular. And so, moving on to the actual subject of this bonus episode is the light novel Chivalry of a Failed Knight. The author is Riku Masora. The artist is Won. It's currently published by Soul Press, who have been in the news recently for some rather... I'll skip past all that for the interest. I don't know if any developments have happened. It's currently incomplete. It stands at 3 volumes long in English, with 17 volumes in Japanese, still ongoing there as well. You can get it digitally at the moment, you can get it ebooks, and that's kind of it. I think there's a print version incoming, but Soul Press are kind of a bit of a black hole at the moment. So, Chivalry of a Failed Knight is set on like a weird alternate Earth where, well, first and foremost, Japan won World War II, but that's like tossed off as a thing that happens just because it's a light novel. And it stars Ikki Kurogane, who is boring light novel protagonist Kun, who is also like, you know, he's considered like the worst person or the worst one in his year at magic school because he's trained to be a magical knight. And everyone has this like magical weapon they can summon, which is like the embodiment of their soul. And his family have partially disowned him because by certain measures he sucks, but as it turns out he is super sugoi, according to this series, this light novel volume we've read. And yeah, he meets and walks in on and manages to like harass Stella Vermilion, who is the red-haired girl on all the covers, who is booby buxom and is like a super genius from another country, from a small European nation. So, you know, she's a bit special. She's got big red hair. She's really strong. She has large natural talent for magic, which is actually a problem because she spends a lot of time keeping it under check. Although that is mentioned in a story, but you never actually see that being done in the actual process of the stupid thing. So cutting to the chase, this is a really generic light novel wish fulfillment power fantasy like garbo. I know that's a bit harsh, but it is, like, even on the very first page it lays on like massive several like proper nouns. It lays on the entire state of the world. It has the main character walking in on the female main character in the prologue and setting up their stupid like, oh, relationship, oh, and you know, it kind of goes from there. Like, main character has every single woman within 600 feet going head over heels for him. Stella, of course, falls immediately in love with him, and this volume ends with her confessing, and that's kind of like a plot catalyst to get him to win a fight that's supposedly unwinnable because he had somehow forgotten his own strategy, which is to analyze his opponent. He, of course, has already destroyed Stella in a one-on-one battle, which is like chapter one of this stupid book. He's defeated some terrorists who were comically stupid, And he also has his estranged little sister, who we are is confirmed is severely blood related, give him a big old snog on the lips, and also admit that she wants to honk him. There's also a trans character who oscillates wildly between being okay representational wise and awful, and I don't have enough of opinion to really judge upon that, apart from it being a really weird thing where it seems to be trying to like have some credentials being open-minded, but comes off as using it as like a, you know, a decoration rather than anything actually useful. And so, yeah, that's kind of it. Is you've got the, and also, yes, of course, the magical knights are also called blazers because you need a cool word. And that's kind of it for the setup and for the synopsis, which I've kind of jumped all over the shop. But yeah, it's intensely boring. I found it really, really boring because it's just a straight power fantasy and nothing. Like, there is danger for the main character and he gets injured, but it's not of any impact or interest, and there's no real tension to anything. It reminds me vaguely of the Irregular Magical High School because it has the exact same concept of, oh, he's just really powerful in ways that you don't measure with your boring mortal ways, which is also like the single most like junior high slash high school thought that a teenager will have is, oh, well, I'm great, you know, you just can't measure it. And it's like, shut up. But yeah, that's kind of it. It was, I think I mentioned to you, Andy, and I'll hand off to you after this, but when I was reading this, I said to you, like, I'm trying to mission through this and get through it in at least in like one or two sittings, because I'm pretty sure that if I stop reading this, I'm never going to want to pick it up ever again. So I need to just read through this in one go so I can be done with it. But was it as painful for you as well, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, you know, I think if kind of aliens landed on this planet and said, like, show me these cliched light novels you always refer to in your podcast, then, you know, I would hand them a copy of this. And then they would probably summarily take off and nuke the entire planet from orbit. So I'm really sorry, everyone. But so yeah, like it is just so generic and boring. And I mean, there was a moment where I kind of ended up going to Wikipedia because there was a moment where I questioned, like, maybe this is just like the first one of these that would kind of like set the tone for all the kind of magic high school series. And then I looked at the date. It's like, no, it doesn't even kind of have the precedent of saying this feels cliched because it's what everything else cribbed on. Cause like you mentioned, the Irregular Magic High School was like several years before this. So it doesn't even have the claim of being like, oh, it only seems generic now because it was cutting edge at the time. It's like, no, even then it was generic. And I mean, to kind of continue our sort of off podcast conversations, I mean, yeah, like when we were talking about this initially in conversation, I kind of said, like, yeah, I think if I was playing kind of cliche light novel cliche bingo, I would have got a full house in the first chapter, which it turned out was unfair and untrue, because it takes three chapters before the incest subplot kicks in. So I was actually very harsh on it there. But yeah, it's just, like you say, there's not really anything interesting to even kind of hook into as a kind of, you know, point of interest at all. I mean, there was a point, and maybe this actually happened, like you mentioned the whole terrorism plot. Like, did I like just sort of fall into a fugue state and miss all of the setup for that? Because it felt like it kind of went from being transphobic to suddenly like, oh, by the way, there are terrorists now. And it's like, I felt like, you know, maybe I just zoned out and missed some pages where it was explained that there were going to be, that there was some kind of terrorist threat kind of in the offing. Cause that just felt like it just was just thrown in out of nowhere.
Okay. So the terrorist threat, which is, very, inventively called rebellion, is, foreshadowed at the very, very start, because it mentions that, oh, well, because initially you think, well, this is clearly a world that has advanced magic and technology, so maybe there's no need for like international warfare. But then it says, oh no, mages are needed military. Like, it's one of these things where like it hasn't properly fleshed out its world, and so a lot of stuff doesn't really make sense or mash up. But it does mention rebellion as being like so this is the thing, is that whenever I try and explain it, I end up having to like repeat things or go back over it. So they're initially introduced as a blazer, like supremacy movement, like Magneto in X-Men, like the classical version of Magneto, where he's trying to make a world for mutants. But then later on, it comes back and says, well, actually, you know, most of the actual membership are humans who, for some reason, think that Blazers are the future, and they have basically hitched their wagon to Blazers to, you know, kind of go along for the ride of their Blazer superiority movement, even though, like, the one human, like, gets utterly just murked in the story as part of this rebellion terrorist attack. But yeah, it literally goes from, like, oh, we're going to the cinema. Oh, it's a weird double date thing, but not quite, because everyone's hankering for the main character. And then they go to the toilet, and then and then there's a terrorist attack. Also, that's another thing I just realized, literally while we're talking about it, as you mentioned the transphobic section, was that, like, so Alice is, Nagi Arusin, also known as Alice, is a transgender character who presents as female. And, you know, this, as mentioned, the series dances around it in a really irritating way, rather than just saying, yep, it's a woman. Where it turns out that this means that the transgender woman goes into the male bathroom with Icky, which doesn't make sense, because if you're presenting as female, I just suddenly realized that, and that's stupid. That makes that scene even more dumb. And also, scrolling through the Wikipedia page, so I can remember the names, I've just spotted a spoiler for a future volume, and I totally called this plot twist that involves Alice. I totally knew it. Like, it was so obvious from literally like two lines of dialogue. And I'm not going to mention it on air, because that'd be really cruel for me to do that. But what the fuck? So
yeah, I bet I can guess what that is as well. But yeah, I mean, it's weirdly kind of the comparison I sort of found myself making very negatively in terms of this book was I kept kind of thinking back to Full Metal Panic that we covered on a recent bonus episode, which, you know, in a way has some of the same kind of setups and strands. Like, you know, that has kind of like fan service comedy elements to it. That has kind of, you know, a romantic element to it. That has terrorists in it. And it does all of those things so much better in a much more compelling and entertaining and engaging way.
Well, I mean, the characters in Full Metal Panic are actual characters. Like,
Exactly.
And also, like, they're way more interesting. like I care about those idiots. Like, parts of them are a bit 2D, or they just haven't had the time to be fleshed out in volume one. But, like, even after, like, this entire volume, there's nothing interesting about the characters in this series. So
yeah, and it doesn't even try. It's like, I mean, you know, we've all read and watched like many a series that has, you know, kind of milquetoast protagonist and, you know, tsundere girl that falls for said protagonist, and you can do stuff with that. Like, you can make that fun and entertaining to a certain extent, but this series doesn't even really try. Like, even in chapter one, it kind of goes, it's almost as if it goes straight from kind of beginning to end with nothing in the middle of like, oh, I hate this character. Oh, no, wait, I love him. And then that's kind of it. Like, there's not really any gradual kind of shift. Like, all of that stuff basically happens in chapter one. You go through the entire sort of relationship arc effectively that would normally take a series like this like 10 volumes, basically in a single chapter. And it's just like, it just feels like such a waste. Like, it sets up all these things that could at least be, you know, passably interesting, and then it just kind of skips to the end for all of them. Like, even kind of Icky's sort of powers and, you know, how he's really kind of amazing. Like, there's never, it doesn't even spend a chapter on kind of like suspending the idea that, you know, he's incredibly powerful. Like, it would have been at least more interesting to have a starting point of seeing him, you know, lose a bunch of battles, or see why he's kind of like down at the bottom of the pile and has been kind of graded as the worst one. But instead, it just kind of mentions that, and then it's like almost straight away, like, oh no, actually he's amazing. Like, let's show you how. And like, that's not interesting kind of character building or development at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really dumb, because it also plays into this really juvenile, really intensely boring garbage of, oh, you know, he's labeled as being garbage, but it just turns out that we're going to like put every single asterisk we can after that, which sucks. It's really boring, like, as you say, because you end up with like Icky, like, just able to completely own this like once in a decade prodigy effortlessly, win her heart, and then just wander on, just continue to wander on. And it's just like, who cares? Like, this is boring. Like, there's nothing interesting by chapter two, it's not interesting anymore. It's wild. Yeah. It's really wild.
Yeah, like, I mean, even a power fantasy kind of needs some sort of semblance of struggle. And I mean, it tries to do that at the end of this volume with the kind of like, oh, is he going to be defeated here? And then kind of half-heartedly throws some stakes into the midst of that battle as well. Like, oh, by the way, like, you know, he has to win this or dot, dot, dot.
That really is a problem where, like, with this format and this kind of light novel sort of genre almost, or like setting, is that, like, right from the get-go, it set it up where the main character kind of can't lose, because they, if they do, it ruins the plot line. Or if they do lose, the author's going to have to find some kind of, like, out to let them get back in again. It reminds me of, what's his face? It reminds me of, the last, like, arcs, or some of the more absurd arcs of Kaiji and the Mahjong anime, Akagi, where, like, the stakes get so high that you look at it and you step away from it and you think, well, they can't lose, because if they lose even once, they're dead, and then the series is over very unsatisfyingly. So you can't kill the character off. Like, you can't set the stakes so high that a single loss will sink them forevermore, because then they can't lose ever, and there's never going to be any interesting development or struggle, as you say. Like, if they'd have just had Ikki lose to Stella in the first chapter, that'd be way more interesting, because that was the one time they had no stakes involved apart from a bit of pride. So they could have just had him get fully owned, and that would have been way more interesting. But no, he has to win.
Yeah, and ironically, like, even then, I mean, you kind of look at a lot of the sort of classic shonen series, you know, whether it's Dragon Ball, Bleach, you know, Naruto, whatever, like, you can build a compelling story out of a character who basically can't lose because you know they're the protagonist of a shonen anime, and still make that really kind of gripping and powerful and compelling. I mean, kind of, you know, Bleach in particular is one I always remember for having, you know, as much as the joke was, well, no, none of the main characters are ever going to die, like, it was very good at making you legitimately believe it was about to kill off a main character.
You could absolutely
buy into it, and then it would pull something back to say, like, ah, no, actually, like, you know, here's a get out. But it still did enough to kind of compel you to be like, oh shit, like, I have to read what's happening now. Whereas this, it never has the guts to go that far, because as soon as it gets even close to the periphery of, like, oh, a character of importance might lose, it kind of bottles it and goes straight to, like, oh, but then he's fine and he wins.
Yeah, I mean, in the case of the terrorist hold up, it really sucks all the air out of the danger, because, like, basically you get the whole, oh, don't you know this will be fine, because your sister will do this and Stella will do this and then we'll do this, and, like, all the tension is gone, and then it's just like making it happen. Which, I mean, to go back to your comparison to Bleach and Dragon Ball, like, quite often, like, characters are written out and the tension is waiting for the main characters to turn up, because, like, in the case of both of those series, they've written in the afterlife as part of their mechanics. So I think that's kind of cheating somewhat, but I can totally get what you mean. I mean, like, how many times does Goku freaking die? Like, the guy spends more time dead than alive. So, you know, it kind of makes sense. Like, and also, like, there are plenty of cases in Dragon Ball, like, even though once you see the arc, you see the bumps in the road, but, like, there's more than enough times when, like, you know, the B squad or even the C squad have to step up and actually do something to keep everyone alive. You know, like, for example, Krillin and Gohan on Namek, like, they got to stay alive for long enough. So, yeah, it's weird. So, but yeah, as you say, in the case of this series, there's zero tension, zero kind of development or earning of anything, which is, like, for a series that hammers on about, oh, you know, it tries to tell some sort of story about talent versus hard work, but it seems to change its mind on what it wants to say about that so many times, because it ends up basically just shitting on both sides of the equation about, oh, well, you need some talent, but you also can't just rely on talent. And it's like, well, what do you want to tell me here? Like, can you just not talk about this shit and tell an interesting story first? Like, philosophy is way beyond you.
Yeah. And again, the whole, there is a potentially interesting plot point there of the whole, like, well, actually, you know, this school and this world has this entire system set up, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't allow for all these other variables. Like, there's a potentially an interesting story in the whole idea of, like, well, you know, the way talent is measured in this world is not accurate and is kind of missing the point. But again, when it's done through such a dull character who's just kind of overpowered in a different way, like, there could be a very subversive version of this series where, you know, Ikki just goes through and just keeps losing and just like doesn't care because he knows, you know, some other kind of truth about the world or whatever. Like there are things that you could do with that that would be, you know, quite kind of interesting, but it doesn't go for any of those because, as mentioned, it's more interested in just the power fantasy of this character, you know, gets all the girls and can win whenever he wants with kind of very little thought or effort, but he can only do it once a day. There's his limit. I'm sure that will never come into play at any point.
Yeah. I mean, plus, you know, like for that power, I mean, Tiger and Bunny already did that. Bugger off. Tiger and Bunny did it way better because the characters are way better.
Yeah, I mean, Konosuba does it better also.
Also that, yeah, because it's way funnier. And Konosuba in general is just a lot more fun to read because it's like, it's not the, like, especially like this book, like it's split into five chapters, but each chapter is basically just an entirely different slice that you could almost like pick them up and rearrange them like outside of the first one and you'd basically have the exact same book because they're so divorced from any kind of momentum. It's kind of harsh. One thing I just realized I remembered watching the first episode of this anime because this is the anime that came out at the same time with the Asterisk War and they basically have the exact same setup. And
yeah. And basically the exact same main female character.
Yeah, kind of, and they had like almost the same sort of like actual pacing. Like people were doing shot for shot comparisons of the two series when they came out.
Peak magical, the peak magical high school era.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it was. But yeah, but at the same time, like extremely flat. Like there's just nothing interesting to grab here.
Because I feel like I want to say one positive thing about this, I will say there is one good gag in this book where like Ikki's sister, when they're in the midst of that terrorist thing, she basically sends a text message hurriedly without looking at her screen to say like, oh yeah, I'm in place, I've set up this barrier or whatever, and just kind of flubs all the spelling because she's not looking. That actually made me chuckle a little bit. Like that's well played, and that was like the single line of this book that was just like, okay, that's actually a half decent gag that was actually half decently written.
No, yeah, I'm with you. I actually had that written down as well about like, oh wow, this is actually a good joke, like shame about the rest of it, but yeah, it's weird, you know.
It's also not the absolute worst written light novel I've ever read. Like I mean there have been one or two where I've basically dipped out after a chapter just because the actual prose is so poorly formed that I just can't, my brain can't deal with it. At least, and this is really damning with faint praise now, at least this has proper sentences and that.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll give it that as well.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that the writing is fine. Like, it's a functional, like, prose story. It's just that the what it's telling you is hot garbage. At least personally. But yeah, it's like the actual translation and everything seems perfectly fine and perfectly viable and it reads well, but I don't want to read any more of it ever, thank you. So yeah.
And I guess, you know, credit to the artists on this series who seems to be quite good at drawing girls in their underwear, which is basically all he has to do, because whenever it seems to get to inserts, it just happens to be at the points where Stella has to strip off for some reason, because that happens surprisingly often in this book.
Yeah, that is as soon as that happened I was like double fucked off with this series. So I'm like, oh come on, like you're gonna do this? Okay, of course you are, fucking hell. Real bad. Did not enjoy, I'm afraid. Unless you got anything else meant, Andy?
No. I mean, I think really, like, you know, even if you are a fan of, like, the whole magical high school genre or you know, kind of like the core premise of it, like, there are so many better versions than this. Like, it's a genre that I'm not really into as a whole, but even stuff like Irregular Magic High School that you mentioned, like, it's highly questionable in a lot of ways, but that at least kind of makes it interesting when you kind of read it and you're like, oh, this book has, like, a political leaning, etc.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a terrible political leaning, but at least it has it. At least it has a some sense of, like, heart and feeling and some kind of thought put into it. Like, this feels like one of those kind of jokes of like, oh, I you know, fed a bot 10,000 light novels and this is what it came up with.
Yeah, the wild, like, oh, and by the way, Japan won World War II bit is just like, what the fuck? Like, what? You don't need to do that. Also, that's dumb. So,
yeah.
God.
Well, I mean, even that is kind of, you know, is at that weird point where you start kind of wishing, like, I just lean into that. Like, I want to hear this backstory of, like, you know, what does this mean for the world? Like, I probably don't actually want to know what this means because it's probably going to espouse some terrible views, but, like, at least least it would be intriguing to me.
Well, that's the thing, is because the only thing it uses that for is to say, oh yeah, by the way, that was Icky's grandfather who won the entirety of World War II on his own. And that's kind of it. Like, there's nothing deeper to it. So that's it. Like, that's it. So yeah, and I'm pretty sure if you press the author, he'll probably just try and meal something out. I don't know. It's yeah, no good. No good. Okay. So yeah, with that rather sort of harsh dunking, that has been our bonus episode on Chivalry of a Failed Knight. If you'd like to vote to make us read more light novels, maybe please don't. You can join our Patreon for $3 or more a month, and that way you get a vote in our monthly voting scheme for the bonus episodes. If you are already a Patreon member, one, thank you. Two, please consider voting, because we're running out of like stuff in our voting bucket. So fill up the bucket, damn it. Okay, so from me, Elliot Page, and my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Handley.
Yeah, thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you, and good night.
Bye.